and welcome to the KMXT Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Davis Hovey. On this week's recap, the Kodiak Island Borough School District's Board of Education is looking to reduce its overall spending by more than $4 million without closing a school as it tackles the upcoming school year budget.
And so I'd like to move on from the meeting tonight, focusing on cuts and not continue to have that shadow and threat that we're also going to close the school.
More about that story later, but first...
Support for KMXT comes from the Kodiak Area Native Association's Substance Use Treatment Team. Talk with your kids about drugs and tobacco. No matter how young children are, talking with them is one of the best things you can do to keep them drug and tobacco free. Learn more at KodiakHealthcare.org or 907-486-7380.
This week is the last week Kodiak Island will see a state ferry for the next few months. The MV Testamina is scheduled to stop in Kodiak, Yuzinki, and Port Lions on Sunday before returning to Homer for the final time this season. But according to a social media post from Alaska Marine Highway System staff at the Kodiak Ferry Terminal, poor weather conditions have already hampered the Testy schedule a couple times this week. The Testamina canceled its scheduled sailing to Homer on January 4th and stayed for an unplanned overnight in Seldovia. That also prevented the ferry from stopping in Port Lions, Yuzinki, and Kodiak on January 5th. There was a direct sailing scheduled from Homer to Kodiak and then back on Thursday, but the weather forced the Testy to remain in Kodiak all day on Thursday until 9 p.m. Friday, January 9th. As of January 9th, the latest schedule has the Testamina arriving in Port Lions at 7 a.m., Yuzinki at 8:45 a.m., and Kodiak at 10:45 a.m. on Sunday, January 11th. Then it's scheduled to depart Kodiak at 5:45 p.m. Sunday, which will be the Testy's last sailing to the island until late April or early May. It's set to be out of service after it returns to Homer on Monday morning, January 12th, for its annual maintenance in the shipyard. Meanwhile, the proposed summer ferry schedule for May through September is open for public comments. Comments can be emailed to the Alaska Marine Highway System until Tuesday, January 13th. There will also be a public teleconference at 11 a.m. on January 13th to accept comments on the Southwest Alaska schedule. This next story comes from our colleagues at KNBA Radio in Anchorage. The U.S. Coast Guard said in a press release on January 5th that they rescued 9 people from a fishing vessel that ran aground near St. George Island in the Bering Sea early that same morning. The agency says no one was injured. As KNBA's Jill Freitas reports, locals say it's a reminder of the importance of having emergency responders in the region.
The fishing vessel Arctic Sea ran aground at just 4 a.m. along the island's northern shoreline. The boat was taking on water, and there were 9 people on board. Todd Lestenkoff is a lifelong resident of St. George. He says he was made aware of the situation from fellow community members.
I first heard about it about 7:30 this morning. I guess somebody said that they heard an EPIRB going off at 7:30. And you can't see anything, but, you know, you could see the lights coming from the underneath the cliffs there.
The Coast Guard says another fishing vessel, the North Sea, was nearby as the situation unfolded. But strong winds and rough seas made it unsafe for the crew to help directly. The agency says winds in the area were near 50 miles per hour, with waves around 10 feet high. Even so, the crew of the North Sea stayed nearby and shared updates with the Coast Guard over marine radio. In response, the Coast Guard sent a helicopter from Cold Bay and a C-130 military transport plane from Kodiak. The Coast Guard also sent a cutter to the area. The Coast Guard said it took about 5 hours for crews to reach St. George Island because of the weather. Lestenkoff says he saw the C-130 about 5 hours after the initial distress call.
The C-130 was here about 9:30-ish in between there. You know, they started orbiting for about, an hour, maybe 10. Thinking about 10:30, the helicopter arrived.
The Coast Guard says the helicopter arrived and lifted all 9 people off the grounded vessel. They were flown to St. Paul Island for medical assistance. This is not the first time a vessel has run aground in the area. The Coast Guard says that nearly 30 years ago, the fishing vessel, All American, ran aground near St. George Island. No one was hurt in that incident either. Coastal Villages Region Fund, which is part of the Western Alaska Community Development Quota Program, said in a Facebook post Monday that the vessel was part of its fleet. Lestinkoff, the local from St. George, says this rescue shows how important it is to have the Coast Guard closer to the Pribilof Islands. The nearest Coast Guard station is in Kodiak. He says the situation proves they need to bring a Coast Guard station back to the region.
I feel there should be one either on the Pribilof or Dutch Harbor or, you know, somewhere a little closer because, time is of the essence when it comes to Bering Sea emergencies.
This time, everyone made it home safely, but in a region with a long memory of losses at sea, community members say the rescue underscores the risks fishermen face and the importance of having help closer when emergencies in Alaska happen. Salvage work on the Arctic Sea will be handled by Resolve Marine, an emergency response company that specializes in helping ships when something goes wrong at sea. In Anchorage, I'm Jill Freitas.
The amount of Pacific cod fishermen can harvest in the state-managed fishery around Kodiak Island this year is slightly down compared to last year. But the Alaska Department of Fish and Game says that quota is not based on the latest stock assessment data, which indicates the number of Pacific cod in the Gulf of Alaska is increasing. Last month, the department announced a harvest level of 5.3 million pounds of fish for the Kodiak area. Last year's quota was 5.6 million pounds. Nat Nichols is an area management biologist with the department in Kodiak. He says when the federal government shut down for a record 43 days last fall, that prevented the 2025 Gulf of Alaska Pacific cod stock assessment from being finalized. And the state and the North Pacific Fishery Management Council rely on that stock assessment for setting the harvest levels for both the state and separate federally managed Pacific cod fisheries.
The assessment was not completed because the people that are supposed to be working on the assessment weren't working. So the council adopted, you know, essentially rollover quotas, and that's why we're getting, you know, very similar quotas to last year, even though the survey indicated that they found more cod.
Nichols is referring to the Gulf of Alaska Bottom Trawl Survey that the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration conducts every 2 years. Despite staffing cuts to the federal agency last year, NOAA Fisheries was able to do its biennial bottom trawl survey in the Gulf of Alaska last summer. That survey gathers data on the health of the Pacific cod population, among other things. Nichols says last year's federal survey data and some information Fish and Game collected during its annual Tanner Crab survey last summer all show Pacific cod stocks increased by about 40% since the last stock assessment in 2023.
The main takeaway is that we saw a similar increase in our survey as in the federal survey, so just all indications are that the cod stock is rebounding.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council said in an email that the council plans to review the latest Pacific cod stock assessment at its meeting next month and possibly update its Gulf of Alaska harvest specifications for the current season. Although that is for the federal fishery, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game says if federal harvest levels are revised, then the department will also issue updated harvest levels for the Pacific cod fishery in state waters. Nichols says it's too early to speculate how the council's upcoming meeting will impact this year's Pacific cod fishery in state waters around Kodiak Island, but an increased fish population tends to result in a higher harvest level. 7 fishermen registered to jig for Pacific cod in the Kodiak area this season, according to Nichols. The Kodiak area jig fishing season opened the beginning of the year, but the pot gear season is not expected to open until at least the end of this month. In other news, various species of birds rarely seen in Kodiak were observed during the 2025 Christmas bird count last month. According to Bill Pyle, the coordinator for the local Audubon Society count, those species included snow goose and trumpeter swans, which have only been seen during less than 10 of the previous 51 annual bird counts. Pyle told KMXT via email that roughly 75 people participated in last month's event, counting roughly 10,500 birds consisting of 76 different species. That's about 15% less than the average number of birds counted in Kodiak over the last 30 years. Due to high winds and cold weather conditions on the day of the count, Pyle said survey boats were not out on the water, and field teams did not go into some of the mountains to count ptarmigan like they usually would. This likely decreased the number of birds counted and the variety of species. Some notable finds included the highest recorded counts in Kodiak of northern shovelers, green-winged teals, and American robins. Emperor goose numbers were significantly above the average count, while stellar eiders were significantly below average. Pyle said that is in line with the apparent decreasing of stellar eider abundance in Kodiak since 2005. Also observed by the Kodiak Audubon Society in recent weeks was a great egret, which was spotted on Kodiak Island extremely far north and outside of its normal range. The full results of the 2025 Kodiak Christmas bird count will be shared on Facebook, and they are expected to be posted on the National Audubon's Christmas bird count website in November. The official observations are in, and this December featured the highest monthly total snowfall in Kodiak in 13 years. According to Rick Toman, a climatologist with the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Preparedness, 30 inches of snow was recorded at the Kodiak Wastewater Treatment Plant last month. Toman said via email that this is the most snow that has fallen in 1 month locally since January of 2012, when 48 inches of snow was recorded in Kodiak. The snowiest days last month were December 6th and 7th, when 9 and 16 inches fell at the local wastewater treatment plant, respectively. On average, Kodiak sees about 8 inches of snow during the month of December. Toman said cold air remained over Kodiak Island for most of last month due to a persistent storm track through the eastern Gulf of Alaska. That brought mostly snow instead of rain, and so far this winter has been more like previous La Nina winters. Typically, La Nina winters feature colder than average temperatures with lower amounts of precipitation, but high snow, according to Toman. And finally, our top story for this week, more than three-quarters of the Kodiak Island Borough School District's costs are related to personnel, which makes it a huge focus when it comes to balancing the budget for next school year. As KMXT reports, the Board of Education is looking to reduce its overall spending by more than $4 million without closing a school. During the roughly four-hour-long work session Monday, the school district's Board of Education leaned in a direction to fill a multi-million-dollar budget shortfall for the upcoming school year.
And so I'd like to move on from the meeting tonight, focusing on cuts, and not continue to have that shadow and threat that we're also going to close the school.
That's Duncan Fields, one of five board members on the school district's Board of Education, and that was the board's tentative consensus on Monday. Instead of closing another school to close the budget gap like last year, this time it plans to cut staff, student activities, and other programs. Superintendent Cindy Mika told the board on Monday which positions she thinks could be cut and which ones should not.
If you did away with the activities director, who's going to do that? It's going to have to be your high school and your middle school administrators.
Mika suggested the activities director be taken off the chopping block, along with the rural school's principal, the assistant superintendent, and elementary music and PE teachers. Dozens of other positions remained on the possible cut list, like school nurses.
So currently we have a nurse and a half at the high school budgeted. We actually have the 0.5 resigned mid-year, and so that's currently not filled. And then we have a nurse at each of our other campuses. So looking at the nurses, and can we share nurses between buildings? I think that we can.
Amanda Knutson, a teacher at Peterson Elementary, pointed out that many of the teachers and staff who are in these positions hold multiple roles within the school district.
On your guys' list, as possible program reductions, are secretary ones, aide twos, and librarians. At least at Peterson, those are all the people that run lunch duty. That would leave just our counselor to do lunch duty and would probably force our secretary too out of the office, leaving nobody in the office to answer the door, answer the phone.
No final decisions about staffing or program cuts were made during Monday's work session. At this point in the budget process, the board only has estimates to work with. Estimates of its revenue, estimates of its expenses, and estimates of next year's enrollment. Because of that uncertainty, the budget deficit is a moving target. After Monday's meeting, the board is aiming to close a $4.5 million gap. Declining student enrollment, rising teacher insurance costs, and other factors are the main drivers for the budget shortfall. Regardless of what cuts the board does make, Mika says she opposes using the district's remaining savings to help balance the budget. So far this school year, the school district is committed to use $5.2 million from its fund balance.
That's been my whole premise going into this budget year, is we cannot use fund balance to balance this budget like we have in the past. It's just, we can't continue doing that. It's
we
not
don't have it.
Yeah, we don't have it. And what we do have, it needs to be for emergencies.
As of Monday, MICA had projected $1.15 million will be left in the school district's fund balance going into the 2026-2027 school year. The largest chunk of the district's expenses is employee salaries and benefits, totaling $33 million out of the $42.5 million the school district has budgeted for personnel-related expenses this school year. Non-personnel costs for the current fiscal year are around $9.5 million. Nearly half of that was spent on utilities and energy costs, which the district sees as mostly fixed. According to the school district's timeline, the Board of Education plans to take final action on the upcoming fiscal year budget later this month. In the meantime, the community can provide feedback in an online survey and at a town hall meeting next week. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
KMXT is supported in part by the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center, providing support for victims of domestic and or sexual violence. 907-486-6171.
If you enjoy this podcast, make sure to subscribe to us on Spotify. Our staff put together KMXT stories every week to help you keep up to date on the archipelago's latest news. And that's it for this week's edition of the KMXT Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm Davis Hovey. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Thanks for tuning in.